Gladright, the Acting Mayor of Kingborough. It is my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 4th of September 2023. Welcome to those who are in the public gallery and watching the live stream at home via YouTube. It is 5:30pm and I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. In accordance with Council's policy, I will ask the General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed, Acting Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to Elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Councillor Gladright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. I would like to extend a warm welcome to our new Chief Financial Officer, Mr. David Spinks. Welcome, and I'm sure everyone is looking forward to working with you. From our staff this evening, we have the General Manager, Mr. Arnold. Our Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Daniel Smee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr. Reeve, Manager of Environmental Services, Ms. Quinn, our NAB Coordinator, Ms. Reichhardt, Media and Communications Advisor, Ms. Sam Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Morton. Apologies this evening is our Mayor, Councillor Reet. Confirmation of minutes. That the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 16 held on the 21st of August 2023 be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Midgley. All those in favour please say aye.
Aye.
Motion is carried. Workshops held since last Council Meeting. On the 28th of August we had a workshop which was presented by Tasmania Police. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? No. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? No. Questions on notice from the public. If you wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We had one question on notice from the public regarding Browns River Bridge from Mr. Tong and an officer's response from Mr. David Reeve. Page 2, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I've got three questions tonight. My first question is about summer bushfire risk. Large swathes of Australia are likely to experience an increased risk of bushfires due to forecasts of above average temperatures, decreased rainfall, high fuel loads and changing weather patterns, according to the Australasian Fire Authorities Council. My first question is, how is Council helping residents to plan and prepare for the coming fire season? And my second question on that is, do you want to deal with them one at a time?
Yes, one at a time would be good, thank you. Who might I direct this one to? The General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, Council has a supporting role insofar as it supports the Tasmanian Fire Service to encourage our community to be fire aware, and that involves a range of measures that we take, which include working with TFS to undertake community information sessions throughout Kingborough, fuel reduction burns, case in point, occurring literally as we speak. We can literally smell the smoke in the chamber. We also undertake fire break maintenance, particularly during the bushfire season, and we undertake, with the assistance of local fire brigades and the TFS, fuel reduction burns on council road reserves. We also have a road slashing program for the roadside verges, and earlier this year council received a report on a roadside risk assessment project that had been undertaken on our behalf by the University of Melbourne, and that will inform future actions moving forward.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor, and it's quite clear that council has a suite of education pieces and activities throughout the municipality, which is really encouraging to see. So my second question on this relates to the fire breaks specifically and the notion of a network of green fire breaks. Do we have plans to increase investment in bushfire mitigation strategies, such as by expanding our network of green fire breaks around strategic urban areas?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, Councillor Cordova, one of the outcomes of the work of the University of Melbourne on our behalf will inform actions in that area. It's anticipated that there will be budget implications, and because the software tool is in its infancy, early days yet, but we're hoping that we'll be in a position to put a project forward for Council's consideration as part of the next budget deliberation.
Further questions?
Thank you. Just one more question on a different matter now through you, Acting Mayor. This one is about the Kingborough Community Hub and ball sports. It was explained to me that, well, please may I have it explained to me, what is our current policy regarding the playing of sports with a ball in the Kingborough Community Hub? And the reason for my question is somebody mentioned to me that it's now forbidden or there's some signage around, and I just kind of want to understand firstly what that signage is, and are we directing people through that signage to a more appropriate area to chuck the ball around, or is it completely forbidden throughout the whole area?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the hub, given its both an office space for our staff, and given that hirers use the space for a range of activities, activities that occur outside, such as ball sports, skating, etc., do cause disruption to the activities that occur in the hub. And I understand that there has recently been signage put in place indicating that those activities are prohibited on that space, but as to the exact detail, I'd need to take that on notice.
Thank you. Questions?
Yeah, just a follow-up on that, if I might, Acting Mayor, just about whether it would be appropriate to direct people to more appropriate places. So rather than just having signs that say, don't do it here, maybe some information or navigation signage just a bit more carrot as well as stick. So maybe a sign that says, no, we shouldn't play ball sports here, but you can head down to the Twin Ovals or maybe head down to a more appropriate area that is close by.
Probably the basketball court, perhaps.
That's a good one.
Did you want that question answered or that comment answered, Mr. Smee?
Through you, Acting Mayor, I'm certainly the basketball court would be an appropriate place to play ball games, as would the new grassed area down that I've seen has been very well utilised given the good weather we've had lately. But as I said, I'd need to check what the signage says in relation to whether it directs users to other areas. But I'd also note that, you know, our community services staff are located over there and they can also communicate that message. And they do endeavour to engage in a positive manner with users of the site. So it's not all about getting out the big stick.
Councillor Street.
Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My question's about the Kingston Library car park. Can I get an indication from staff as to whether we police that car park with respect to the sign that advises that the car park is only available for users of the library?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we certainly do police the car park. Whether we have the ability to determine whether a car that's parked there is owned by someone who is using the library, I would be very surprised. I'm aware that obviously the car park is owned by the library. We have a contract to police it. It is certainly their desire for it to be used by library users only, and our staff, in fulfilling their duties, would endeavour to ensure that, but as I said, I would suggest that it would be a very difficult matter to enforce.
I tend to agree, but I'll pass the answer on regardless. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Street. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just have a couple of questions. My first question is around the State Government's proposed high-performance training facility. Just wondering if we can get updates on what dealings Council have had with State Government to date around possible locations for the proposed high-performance training facility.
Mr Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Council has been approached by the Department of State Growth, who are managing the project on behalf of the AFL. This approach has only been within the last week or so. We have indicated at this stage that we are open-minded with respect to the opportunities that that might bring, but you know, we need to understand what the detail of the proposal is, what the implications are, what the impacts are, what benefits it brings. So, look, really early days in terms of this particular project, and at this stage we've just said we've got an open mind, but certainly not in a position to be able to bring anything to council or even provide any further information, because at the moment my understanding is we are one of a number of potential venues, and as I say, we've just said, yep, happy to explore the opportunities.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Second question is just in relation to one of our capital works projects, and that's the footpaths on the Channel Highway between United Servo and Mertondale Circuit. Just wondering if we've got any indicative start and finish dates for the footpaths, and also is that likely to include an upgrade for the bus stop that's on the Channel Highway there?
Mr Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, I wish I could say we did have an indicative start. So we're waiting on DSG to provide back a concept design for the footpaths. They are looking at, the widths of the lanes, looking at the shared path proposal that they would like to see in place. And they would also be looking at the existing bus stops in terms of how that might fit in with that project. That won't cover the proposed new bus stop that they're planning for the Spring Farm development, which was opposite Bunnings at some stage. But it certainly will cover where there's an existing bus stop at the moment and making sure that the buses can actually use that, and probably will make it an accessible bus stop as well at the same time.
Councillor Bain.
That's good, thank you.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor, and thank you to Councillor Bain for stealing my thunder on the high-performance training venue. I would like to add my voice of support to Council working constructively on a win-win. I don't expect us to be doing any heavy lifting, but it would be good to see something like that in our area, in our municipality, especially for our young people. Then I have two other questions, therefore. Could council officers please update the community on any decisions that have been made regarding line markings for Redwood Road, and in particular the stretch of road in front of Calvin Christian School on Maranoa Road?
Mr Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, so at the moment their submissions are open for to DSG for looking at particular candidates for line marking. So Redwood Road is one of the ones that have been put forward for that. We hope to actually hear back from them very shortly in terms of whether that's successful or not. If it's not successful, it would be likely that Council will end up actually line marking that out of our own budgets. Mainly because the amount of complaints we've actually had about that particular stretch of road. The other one, which you refer to, which is Maranoa Road, we were lucky enough to actually get some black spot funding to do some work in that area, so that will actually be covered under that particular project.
Oh, fantastic. And any ideas to when we would start the Maranoa piece? Please don't use that word. Imminent.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, so it's just under design at the moment, so I would imagine the construction will be later on this calendar year.
Okay.
Any further questions, Councillor Antoli?
Yes, one more. Could council officers provide the community with a progress update on the ongoing works for the Channel Highway in front of Channel Court and Council Chambers? Where are we at, and particularly when could the end of works be forecast?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So obviously we are getting towards the end of the project. The construction works by Blackcap are complete. We still need to install street furniture. The bulk of the street trees and plantings have gone in. There is the bus interchange to open, and a little bit of more work required to complete that. First and foremost is the relocation of some optic fibre, for which we needed to give the bank 30 days notice. And then there's also bus stops to go in. But on the whole, we're 95% through the project and should be totally finished by the end of this month.
Thank you.
Councillor Antoli, further questions?
No, just I am getting a lot of positive compliments from people in the community who are using the road, and it does seem to be a lot easier to traverse up and down for both pedestrian and road users, for drivers as well. So that's a good win. Thanks, Acting Mayor.
Are there any other further questions without notice from councillors? No, moving on to questions on notice from councillors. There were three. The first one was temporary food stall fees from Councillor Midgley and an officer's response from Liz Quinn. The second was regarding bicycle parking at the Kingborough Community Hub from Councillor Midgley and an officer's response from Carol Swords. And the third was regarding Margate Main Street Master Plan from Councillor Midgley and an officer's response from Mr Reeve. There are no petitions still being actioned, and at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. We're moving now to page 4, officers' reports to council. There is a recommendation on page 6. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Fox. Seconded, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I think the objective of the coastal hazard policy is to state Council's position on coastal hazard management. We have had a workshop on this issue, and the adoption of the coastal hazards policy is a critical step towards putting in place a framework for Council's decision-making approach on potential risks for coastal hazards on land within the coastal zone and guiding Council's coastal management activities. The intent of the policy is to achieve risk reduction and the protection, sustainable use and enjoyment of coastal public lands under coastal management while working towards the best practice management of Council's coastal assets. With climate change, there are a lot more pressures on our coasts and people are trying to protect their assets. People are concerned about Council's assets. The state government's concerned about the coastal areas, and it's important that we understand the processes that are in place and how we can deal with them over the years. It's going to be an expensive exercise all round, but it's important that everybody understands what's happening and how everybody should fit into that project and process. And I'm very pleased to see that this is formally being put to council so we can all be on the same page. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. It's a great privilege to be able to second this policy, and I think it speaks to the volume of work that Council staff have been doing around this space, and so I do want to thank them for all the work that's gone in so far. And basically here at Council we're doing a couple of different things at the same time. So we are, through our switching our fleet to EVs, putting solar panels on roofs and various other things to mitigate, you know, our net zero emissions target by 2035. These are things to mitigate our impact on climate change. But where the rubber hits the road, really, in my opinion, is the adaptation strategies. And that's what this policy really is. It's saying, how are we going to adapt to a changing climate, and how are we going to adapt to what we know is a very dynamic coastal system? So we are very lucky in Kingborough that we have a lot of coastline, more than 300 kilometres of coastline, and this is an a dynamic system at the best of times. So it's kind of a pre-existing condition that it will, because of inundation or because of erosion, this coastline changes, and yet so many people depend on it. We rely on it for working and living and recreation, and we love our coastline and we care very deeply about it. So obviously this is an issue for which many people are very passionate and very emotional about the changes that we are seeing. And of course, because of anthropogenic climate change, higher frequency of more intense weather events, we are starting to see, faster changes to our coastline. So what is critical is, just like with bushfire mitigation, it's critical that we plan and we prepare. And this policy gives us that framework, that guidance. It articulates a way of step-by-step determining what are the priorities and what are the hierarchies. And so that's, I guess, the first question that I had for our staff through you, Acting Mayor, is to maybe take us through or explain, in case I'm not explaining it quite correctly, about the categories of adaptation response in the coastal zone. That is avoidance, managed retreat, infrastructure modification, and holding the line. Can we talk? I'd just like, hopefully, for our staff to be able to unpack this idea of what's the difference maybe between managed retreat, soft solutions, and engineered solutions, and what's really likely to happen as we go forward. Thanks.
Ms. Reichert?
Through you, Acting Mayor. I suppose the first thing there, I'd just like to pull apart, there's the decision-making framework and then there's a hierarchy of controls. Those two things shouldn't be mixed together. So the decision-making framework, you've got the avoidance, the managed retreat, infrastructure modification, hold the line. So they're the decision-making framework there to work through about whether you'd undertake any of those management options. If you got then to hold the line, any sort of intervention, I guess, then you would go through the hierarchy of intervention, whether you would go through the soft controls or the engineering options. So that those two things are very separate. So how far would you like me to delve into those, Councillor?
Through you, Acting Mayor, I guess what landowners and community members are going to be interested to hear is how does this affect me?
So basically, when we go through that decision-making framework, we'd be looking at it's a site-by-site basis. The first thing we'd be wanting to do, I guess, it goes through those avoidance, manage retreat, infrastructure modification, hold the line. So that is the first thing you want to do is avoidance. So for council, it's going to be avoiding putting any new infrastructure in a coastal hazard zone, and that's going to be unless there's significant public benefit or it's a low-cost infrastructure. So maybe we might still go and put the public toilets down in the playground at the beach, but we're not going to perhaps build a significant building down in the playground. So avoid building in the coastal hazard zones where we can. Manage retreat is also, I think those two things go hand in hand as well. They're both low-cost options and always the first things to go for. And in that scenario, that's just letting natural processes take its place. So it's letting the coastline come back, perhaps the salt marshes retreating back into the landscape. Infrastructure modification, again, that's another low-cost option. So it's just changing perhaps the way we build. So, yes, we're going to build into those coastal hazard areas, but change it so that is able to withstand coastal hazards. So perhaps, we might build a more fortified structure, or perhaps in the area of Snug Beach there's one that we're looking at. The toilet block there, I believe, is going to be able to be relocated. So that's a really good example. And then hold the line is the last resort. So that's normally the highest cost, and that's where you're looking at building sea walls or even the sandbags, which can end up pretty costly.
Further questions?
Thank you. I'll just conclude my remarks, if I might. And thank you for that explanation. That's terrific. I would like to just explain that the communications aspect of this policy is really important, because the councillors have had the benefit of a really informative and eye-opening, to be frank, workshop about what coastal hazards really are in Kingborough, and how. So now I believe councillors are alert to that risk, but obviously people in the community will have a different set of expectations if they're unaware of what those risks are. So by identifying those risks and really explaining, well, here are the options, here are the potential timeframes, consequences, the implications, we really need, I guess, to work with, as the policy outlines very well. This is a partnership with community members and the council and the commercial interests, who are all involved in our coastal zone. And we will disseminate this information just as we talk to people, and as there are special climate change adaptation projects, whether it's Snug or Adventure Bay or elsewhere. Community groups and individuals will get to know this policy, but it really is, I believe, a critical step in guiding council's priority and hierarchy, and guiding the way that council deals with coastal management. I guess what I would say is that there are significant financial consequences of anything. I mean, if you do nothing, there's significant financial consequences, and if you start building seawalls, there's significant financial consequences. And if you meet in between somewhere where the community wants, in between those two points of extreme, there will be consequences there as well. So that's why it is such a critical policy, and I'm really very proud to have seconded it, and I, again, want to thank the staff for all the work that's gone into it.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have a question or two and a contribution. My first is, has there been any change in this policy since our workshop some weeks ago? Is this basically just a reflection of those workshops?
Ms. Reichardt.
Through you, Acting Mayor. There's been three words taken out, Councillor, and they have very little consequence. They made it more grammatically correct.
Okay.
Councillor Antoli.
I'm all for correct grammar. Well done. I think this is a very important policy. I am not a believer in anthropogenic climate change, but I am a believer in climate change, and I've shared from this side of the table why I believe in what I believe. I believe a policy like this is important because the forces of nature are much bigger than us, and without a policy, we can't actually go to the federal government, and which is, I think, key. Funding is key for this sort of thing. The big money is with the feds, and if we don't have a well thought through, meaningful policy that puts people first, we can't go to them and say, we need help. And I really do think the next big game is to go to the feds with our policy and to meaningfully apply for grants, big ones, to affect changes and prioritise them. Without a policy, we don't have it. So I really support this policy wholeheartedly for those reasons, and would be happy to, in any way, shape or form, contribute to its success by making sure that the coastline of which the majority of us live on is secure and safe for as many people as possible. And I do congratulate the staff on putting together a practical as opposed to a political policy. So well done.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I also agree wholeheartedly as well with the policy development and the practicality of its implementation. The report provides such a great understanding and scope. If community members are reading that to understand why we're actually doing this policy in the first place. And the points that Councillor Cordova asked in regards to the hierarchy in the decision-making process, I really like that you can follow that, and it gives a really clear understanding, again, for community members to understand how councillors are making those decisions. I just had a question further on to the community engagement. So I guess in regards to, you know, our communities change and new people move in. How does that ongoing community engagement in regards to informing new members of the community about the policy?
Ms. Reichart.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yeah, that's a really good question, and it's one we've considered quite a lot on the community engagement component. I think the document itself, the best engagement's going to come from it when we're actively engaging the community in coastal hazards. So whether that be through any of the adaptation programs or local area plans, so if that's the case, I think they'll be moving into an area where there perhaps is going to be a project going on already, and then they'll be picked up through that engagement process. Yeah, because I think the document as it sits now is quite heavy, it's quite technical.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yes, that completely makes sense, and thanks for that. And the only other question I had was, sometimes we have different policies come up for council. I do a bit of a search and see what other local government areas have, and it was just in regards to the scope in point four. So our policy states, this policy applies to land in the coastal zone that is influenced by coastal processes and hazards. And when say had a look at Clarence Council, there's stated land controlled by council and private land where council is involved as a planning authority. And I thought in the kind of report we referenced some of that application, but I just wanted to understand the difference in our policy to that, sort of what they stated in that policy.
Ms. Reichart.
Through you, Acting Mayor. We absolutely have discussed that point around the table when we were developing the policy, and it's a pretty tricky one. So we certainly use Clarence's policy as a guide and just talk to them about what they had learnt. So the policy is very much about council land in that is our focus, our land and our assets, as opposed to council doing work to protect on our land to protect private landowners. So it's very definite about the roles and responsibilities there. Of course, council also acts as a planning authority, and the planning scheme has a whole code dedicated to coastal hazard management. And so the two things sit side by side, really, I think. And so where coastal works are going on to protect a coastal hazard, the planning scheme will potentially be triggered depending on what it is. So they will work together, but we didn't think we needed a specific reference to the scheme in the policy. And I'm fairly sure Clarence are currently redoing their policy, and I'm thinking they might rethink that too. Yeah.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you very much.
Are there any further? Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Acting Mayor. From my perspective, absolutely supportive. I did have a question, and it kind of follows up on Councillor Midgley's comment around community engagement. 7.3, I suppose, names up three of our most vulnerable communities in Snug, Kingston Beach and Adventure Bay, and in your response, in a staff response just previously, local area plans were mentioned. So I was just wondering, I think people, this is obviously a policy that sits above those local area plans and is a high-level document, but I guess if people were to look at this and listen to this conversation, see their community where they might not be fully aware that they are considered a vulnerable community, could you potentially just give us some kind of indication of the time frame of when or where we're at with those local area plans and just moving forward how they might roll out over the next few years?
Ms. Reichart.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I'll continue on. So we haven't started any coastal management plans yet as council, but what we have done and what some people in those communities will be familiar with, and the information is also on council's website, we've done a lot of the science and investigation work in those communities. So we've done a first pass and a second pass assessment of what are the risks in those particular communities, which is how we know they are our our three most highest risk communities. So the next step is that we've started to take in SNUG at the moment through a natural disaster risk grant that we currently have, is to look in more detail, which is the third pass assessment that you need to do around coastal hazards, which is to really look at the detail about what is going to happen over certain time intervals in that community and what do we need to do, so the conversations with the community about adaptation. So we've started those conversations in SNUG, and that'll be rolling out even over the next 6 months with town hall type meetings and walk and talk on the beach with the technical experts and those sort of things. And then that'll go into a coastal area plan, and that'll be the first one that we'll do. To implement Adventure Bay, I think in the Council's strategic plan looking forward over 5 years, I think we've got Adventure Bay as the next plan off the rank, and then it'll be if we do Kingston Beach after that. Yeah.
Councillor Dean.
Only just to say thank you for that answer. I realise it wasn't entirely, well, it's relevant, but it's not named up, I guess, in terms of what we're actually delivering here, but I think it may help those in the community who see their suburb or area name. So thank you very much.
Are there any other further comments or questions? No, I'll put the motion then. It's printed on page 6. It was moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. Turning now to page 12, natural burials. There is a recommendation on page 13. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the purpose of this report is to recommend the establishment of an area for natural burials in Council Cemetery in the Northwest Bay Cemetery. And I thank staff for bringing this to Council. I was sure I had received correspondence on this during some terms during my time in Council. I looked back through some emails and did find one in April 2021, where I had a member of the community and a few members of the community actually, after attending some community events, ask me what we can do about natural burials, and I didn't really follow it up from then. So, and since then, I understand we've had a lot of events at the Hub, and I'd like to acknowledge we do have an audience member here tonight who's been involved in some of the conversations about death and dying in the Hub, and this has been a topic. And I know a number of people in the community who've attended that, and they were grateful that Council put that on and that for that conversation, and definitely has sparked that conversation around natural burials. And so, as it states in the report, there are some other councils in the Northwest that have also made this decision, and also Launceston City Council, I think, was also looking at establishing a natural burial site. And I did find a bit of a quote there from Malcolm Cohen from the Natural Burial Northern Tasmania. He said the natural burial process is attractive to people who want to reduce their environmental impact. There's no fuss with an expensive coffin. Cemeteries can actually recycle the sites, he said. You're returning your body to a more natural state. It's sort of like composting, if you like, if you're into gardening. So it's great that we can offer this choice to the community, and as we haven't had any applications yet, well, we might see some coming. So I hope we can support this.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
I have a few questions, and I guess I'm very supportive of this motion. It's interesting that we're looking at the Margate site, and I'm wondering whether there are other potential sites in Kingborough that we could consider, private land.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Staff have looked at this and believe that the Northwest Bay Cemetery is the most appropriate at this point in time, but certainly we would be more than open to looking at our other cemeteries and whether they could also lend themselves. And what's proposed in the report is that we review the success of this after 12 months and maybe we open it up further. I think it's important to note that under the legislation, a natural burial could occur in any one of our cemeteries now. What we're proposing is we set aside a dedicated area for this so that the whole integrity of the process is maintained by having a dedicated area that's not a mismatch of traditional and natural. So But to answer your question, yes, it could be extended, but we're suggesting we go with one at the moment and review in 12 months' time.
Councillor Fox.
And the other question I tied to the end of that question, is it legal at the moment for people to have private burials on their own land?
It is my understanding that it is not allowed, but I'll get Mr. Smee to confirm that.
Through you, Acting Mayor, you're getting into a whole area of legislation that relates to public health that's beyond my knowledge, which relates to the Burials Act and Council's requirement as a cemetery manager. My understanding is that you can't simply have a burial on private land without going through a very convoluted legislative process, but I must confess I don't know the details of that.
Councillor Fox.
I guess I've driven through the Midlands and often seen little gates around tombstones, and they're obviously not associated with the church, and they're obviously large family groups on very large properties, so I'm presuming it is legal somehow. And I'm wondering also whether this type of burial service is already in other councils and is it being used?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I'd suggest the grave sites you're seeing up the Midlands are historical. They predate current legislation. In relation to other councils, as Councillor Midgley alluded to, there are a number of councils up north that are doing exactly what we're proposing, and there may be more. Certainly my research indicated that Burnie was the first one to do it in Tasmania, but there's also been a number of others in the north of Tasmania that have provided specific provision for a dedicated area as opposed to simply allowing it within their cemeteries.
Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I think Councillor Fox has taken a couple of my questions away, but thank you for answering those. The area at the Margate site that you want to set aside, that site in itself is a very small site. What impact would this have, positive or negative, to the options available to families that want to pursue a natural burial? Because my concern is that maybe we could offer more. Burials are funerals are massively expensive. A natural burial is normally cheaper. What can we do to make that as an option more available to people than just the small section of a small site?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the North West Bay Cemetery is actually larger than what it might seem. So we've got, we've only filled less than half of the space available there. So there's a whole other section that hasn't been surveyed off that will certainly be available for many, many years to come. I mean, to answer your question in terms of how can we make more sites available, it would simply be a case of us needing to identify other additional council-owned cemeteries that could lend themselves to the appropriate assignment of a dedicated area. I mean, alternatively, as I said before, a natural burial can occur within an existing cemetery, but my sense on this is that, you know, the desire is to have a natural burial occurring in an area that all the surrounding burials are also of the same ilk.
Mm.
So not to mix traditional burials in with natural burials, but to have a dedicated area where that occurs. So, but quite simply, to have more is to open up more cemeteries.
Councillor Antoli.
My final question is around what would stop us or what prevents us from setting aside a exclusive natural burial cemetery in our municipality.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, we could do it. There's nothing to stop us in saying that we only have a limited number of cemeteries that we manage.
Mm.
All of them obviously have existing traditional burials within them, so you're not going to get a situation where you have a cemetery that is solely natural burials because of the past.
Councillor Antoli.
When you say the past, what do you mean, sorry?
Mr. Smee.
Past practices with respect to traditional burials existing.
Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just a couple of questions. One about our cemeteries generally. How many interments a year are we actually seeing in our council cemeteries?
Mr. Smee.
So is that how many burials per year?
Yeah.
Through you, Acting Mayor, it does tend to vary, but we would get on average between 6 and 10 a year across all of our cemeteries.
That's actually more than I expected it to be. My only other question, and broadly supportive of people having the option to do whatever they like, but are there any public health and environmental health concerns with natural burials like the ones described in the report?
Mr. Smee.
So through you, Acting Mayor, the legislation provides the detail with respect to, yes, there are public health issues associated with a natural burial, and legislation stipulates what must be done in terms of a body if it is to be naturally buried. And they relate more to the transport of the body to the site than actually what occurs once it's put in the ground.
Councillor Street.
No, that's all. Thank you.
For my own contribution then, I would just like to say that the death cafes here in Kingborough have been extremely popular, and natural burials are becoming more and more desired. It is my understanding that leasehold cemeteries have been banned in Tasmania and that natural burials are not allowed on private land. So if these types of burials are to be advanced for our community, then we need to support this motion and provide a dedicated area. Also, in learning about this topic, I've learned that the treatment is quite different for a natural burial. For example, coffins aren't used, instead a cloth shroud. Things like plastics aren't used, and chemicals aren't used. So I would like to propose an amendment. I know I can't move an amendment from the chair, but I feel like the current motion doesn't go far enough, and we need to add in there that those who are wanting to have a natural burial, when they apply, that they are given some information, and that information can be given to the funeral directors, because that information needs to be given to them quite efficiently, because there's a risk that if a funeral director doesn't know that that person wants a natural burial, that they may start applying chemicals or whatever they typically do. So I have prepared an amendment, but because I can't move the amendment, I'm hoping that the mover and seconder would be happy to include it. So I'll read out the part B. It just says, the certificate of burial rights for the natural burial include conditions to ensure that the integrity of the process is maintained. These words were advised by Mr. Smee. So it's just ensuring that some additional information is provided when somebody requests a natural burial.
Are we allowed to move to discuss?
Certainly.
It's just it's a bit unclear to me. I wouldn't mind discussing this. Is that all right? Can we do that? We don't need to vote on that, do we?
I'll second that motion.
Okay. So we have a mover in Councillor Antoli and a seconder in Councillor Street. Do we need to vote on that? All those in favour, please say aye. And against? Okay. So we have moved to discuss.
Thank you.
Councillor Antoli first.
So look, I would like to move anything that makes freedom of choice for our community more wide for them. So I wouldn't mind getting some advice maybe from Mr. Smee as to what he... That wording is a bit unclear to me. I'm not too sure what it's trying to achieve. What do the funeral home directors not do that they should be doing? I thought it was a highly regulated space. I'm just trying to understand what it is that we are trying to put in there to ensure that they're doing their jobs better.
Mr. Smee.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So I think it's important to understand that council issues what is called a certificate of burial rights, which in effect provides the recipient of that certificate the right to privatise a bit of public land in which a body will be buried. That's what we currently do. When you pay your fee to purchase a plot, you are issued with a certificate of burial rights. So the intent of this amendment is to ensure that when a certificate of burial rights is issued, it includes specific conditions that explain that this particular plot is to the burial that will occur will be a natural burial. And while a natural burial is an approach rather than, you know, it's not a defined legislative process, it's an approach. The approach does come with requirements with respect to the integrity of the process. And those requirements are that the body's not treated with chemicals, it's not embalmed, and that whatever container is used to bury the body is a natural one. So, you know, it could be a wooden coffin, but that coffin couldn't be painted or treated in any way. It could be a shroud, but as the acting mayor said, you know, it couldn't be wrapped in plastic. So it's just this amendment is around making it explicitly clear that the particular burial plot is to be the process of the burial is to occur in the way that's prescribed for a natural burial. So I think the amendment certainly has merit in terms of making it really clear to anyone that applies for a burial plot and they want a natural burial that they then have an official certificate from council that says the right to bury someone in this location comes with certain conditions, and those conditions relate to the integrity of the process of a natural burial.
Councillor Antoli.
If I may, so that I'm clear, you're saying that currently families don't know that their loved ones could be, their remains could be dealt with this way, is that right? And that this certificate is informing the family of a right that they have that they probably are not being made aware of because, dare I say, the funeral director wants to upgrade them to a more expensive burial process where they, as a funeral director, will probably make more profit or margin than a natural burial. Is that correct?
Mr. Smee.
Through your acting mayor, it's probably more around if someone purchases a plot from us and it's for a natural burial, then the funeral director needs to know that that is the process that is going to occur with this burial. Okay. So they don't embalm the body, right. They don't treat it with chemicals. So that needs to be known up front.
The intent of the amendment is simply that when they book a plot,
yeah,
that they get the information. Okay. Councillor Street.
I don't necessarily have an issue with this, but I just thought that I'd share from my experience one issue that I foresee, and that is in being an estate planning lawyer, we will often take a certificate of burial rights from a person in the process of their estate planning and store it with their will, which is not a whole lot of use in terms of the funeral director being on notice in a timely fashion of a person's wish to be naturally buried. And I just would hate for people who are coming to us to obtain a natural burial plot, to think that that's the end of the story in terms of them needing to notify family members and or a funeral director in advance of their wishes for a natural burial. And so I don't have a problem with it, but perhaps if we're going to go down this path, we just... It might be taken on notice by Mr. Smee that in addition to doing this, we do need to say this is not the end of the... I don't know what the wording is, but essentially this is not the end of making people aware of your wishes. You need to do more than this mm-hmm. because sometimes this isn't going to be seen until after the process commences.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Smee?
Through you, Acting Mayor... Yeah, Councillor Streets is absolutely correct. Simply including conditions on the certificate of burial rights won't guarantee. And again, our council doesn't get involved in the digging of graves. We simply issue a certificate to say you can bury someone here. Other councils do dig the graves, so they have more control over the process, but we don't. We issue a certificate and then... Our only requirement after that is to record the details of the deceased in a register. So we can certainly, in our advice and communications for anyone that books a plot in a natural burial area, provide advice to the effect that Councillor Street has mentioned.
So I'm wondering if rather than including conditions attached to the certificate, that it's more just a flyer of information that is given to them. Councillor Fox.
Well, I guess I have a concern about the way we're heading with this amendment because I'm just wondering why the concept wasn't put in the original motion that's come to council. Mm. And I think we're getting into the details of the into details which are beyond the higher level decision, which is what the first motion was. That's why I wasn't prepared to take it as an amendment. And I still feel that way. I think we should perhaps leave it to staff to deal with these detailed issues, their process issues. And I think the limited number of deaths that we have in the community, the limited number of actual cemeteries that we have, and also the limited number of people performing these rites, I think it's important that we just keep it at a high level.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. So, Mr. Smee, my question to you is, would you have written this in if you had thought of it when you were writing the motion, because this did come to us from the Mayor, who indicated that this should be included.
Acting Mayor, certainly when I wrote the report, the type of detail that you're getting into was detail that I had expected would be an operational consideration as part of our enactment of the council resolution. Now, I understand that the Mayor felt quite strongly in relation to wanting that incorporated as part of the council resolution, just to ensure that, you know, there could be included within the resolution this requirement to make sure that it happens. But in answering the question, we had previously considered it and we had proposed to do this as part of our implementation of the decision. So, mm-hmm. I'm not fussed whether it stays in or out. It won't affect what we do. Mm-hmm. It just provides, I guess, a more rigid council resolution with respect to the process.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm trying to get my head around it, and I think it sounds like it will be fine if we include it, and so I'm leaning towards just including it, but it is operational in detail. It feels to me like it's pretty operational, but if it lends some sense of safety and comfort to people, then I'm absolutely happy to include it. But I just wanted to ask a question. At 4.2, it says that the Kingston Cemetery is operated by Millingtons. It doesn't mention, or maybe I haven't found where it says who operates the North West Bay Cemetery, but how many private operators are there that we're talking about? Because isn't it true that Millington's obviously knows what to do with private burials? With natural burials, and so I'm sure every other operator knows what to do. Maybe I'm wrong. Can I have some clarity as to how many private operators do we need to engage with in order to make sure that everybody's on the same page?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we're not talking about engaging with any other operators. We're talking about council-owned and operated cemeteries in which we allow a natural burial to occur. Now, there are a host of church-owned cemeteries within Kingborough. We're not proposing to impose anything on them. That's their business. Millington's is a private operator. We're not proposing to do anything with Millington's. This is about our owned and managed cemeteries.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. So, I get that much now, and so then the next bit that I still don't get is, so if we don't, for example, dig the graves because we don't have ownership over that process on council-owned and operated cemeteries like North West Bay, so who digs the graves and has control over that process?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the funeral director. Uh-huh.
Councillor Cordova.
Okay, so I think it's fine. I think it's fine, and I think it's not a big deal. But also, at the same time, it seems very operational to me, which is why I'm just a little bit hesitant. You can hear the hesitance in my voice, because it feels like we don't really need to put it in, and I'm never a big fan of putting stuff in if we don't need to, but I really think it's at the margins. It's a line ball, this one, so I'm happy to support for now, I guess.
Would anybody else like to add a comment or ask any questions? We're still in discussion. No? In that case, we will put the amendment. We don't have an amendment. Okay. Anybody else like to add a comment or a question? No?
I think we should just let it go. I don't think we've got an amendment to vote on. So how we close this up, I don't know.
Any other comments or questions? No? Okay, so I'm looking now for a mover and a seconder for the amendment. There are none. Okay, so we are back on the substantive.
Sorry, I'm happy to move it. Okay, all right.
Okay, we're back on the substantive. Would anybody else like to speak or ask a question? Councillor Cordova,
yes,
you have already spoken on the...
I don't think so. I thought I'd just ask some questions, maybe.
Okay.
Or in discussion. But anyway, okay. I'll be very brief, and that is to say through you, Acting Mayor, that this is a really good proposal, and I think it's really good that we are actually embracing a lot of different options, because the main thing when it comes to end-of-life care is choice and autonomy and giving people as many options as possible and really embracing people's wishes and making sure that their family and their community is on board as well. So I think this is a very positive step, even though it won't in this... even though the motion is going as originally written and without that extra appendage, I think it is still very good, and I entrust... in the process that, because we've had this discussion, hopefully people are on the same page about the integrity of the natural burial and how it needs to take place, and I would trust that the funeral directors and the council can work collaboratively where that's appropriate. So thank you for the discussion, and thanks to the author and authoriser, and I look forward to passing this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. Just a small thing. I completely agree with it. The natural burial seems like it makes a lot of sense. But I just wanted to put on the record for clarity that there is a process to do burial on private land. The Department of Health have a five-step application process on their website, should anyone like to look at it.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? No. So I will put the motion. The motion is printed on the screen or printed on page 13. It was moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, motion is carried. Moving now to page 14, appendices. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. There is a recommendation on page 14. A mover, please. Move Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley. Nothing? Any comments or questions? No, so I'll put the motion. It is printed there on the screen or on page 14. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, motion is carried. Page 14, notices of motion. There were no notices of motion. Confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. That in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, AB 2307, supply of road sweeper truck, Kingston Park commercial tenancy lease and current court matters. I'm looking for a mover. Moved Councillor Fox. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. In accordance with Kingborough Council meeting audio recordings guidelines policy, recordings of the open session of the meeting will now cease. So thank you very much to everybody who has been watching from home. The open session of council adjourned.